So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Sichere dir außerdem bis zum 24. Dezember 10% Rewe Bonusguthaben auf Weihnachtssüßwaren. Nur in deiner Rewe-App. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey, and with me today is Associate Editor Mike Williams.
How you doing, folks?
Today, we're going to be talking about newly released RPGs, Tales of Zestiria. Is it Zestiria? Yeah, I got it right. I was like, Zestiria, Zestiria. Like, I can't keep the Tales as made up words straight in my head sometimes. But
I think the next one is Tales of Bestiria.
No way.
Vestiria? Something like that.
So, well, we've had Exilia and Vesperia. What about the days when it used to be Tales from the Abyss and Tales of Destiny? You know, like, words that actually made sense.
I think they're just having fun right now, you know.
Like they do. As they are wont to do. But we're going to talk about that, and then Bob is going to come on the show, and we're going to talk a little bit about Dragon Quest Heroes, which is RPG-like. It's an RPG-like substance that comes from a very popular RPG, and also happens to be the first Dragon Quest in a little while to come out in the US, which is kind of depressing when you think about it. But in any case, we'll have some thoughts on that. But let's start with Tales of Zestiria. Mike, you know, despite the fact that you're actually probably the biggest anime fan on staff, you're a regular at Otakon and that kind of thing, you are not super familiar with the Tales series. So I'm kind of like curious, like, what did you think?
I mean, I liked it. Like I said in the review, like, the combat's really nice, and the other gameplay systems that like all feed into it need some work. There are definitely some issues, but the game's cast was really enjoyable. It really pushed the game over the top. And I think the Tales development team knows this, because there's a lot of vignettes and skits where all of the cast pretty much interacts with each other. Like, after every battle, it puts up a little skit where they sometimes congratulate each other or talk about something completely unrelated to the combat. At any save point, you can click in the analog stick and see like a skit where they just talk about stuff. So the series as a game is decent, but what puts it over the top for me, what really made it enjoyable, was the cast itself.
You know, that is also like one of the things that I've always liked about the Tales games. Not so much the cast, which usually is pretty like paper thin in their characterization, but just the different little goofy conversations that they have. It reminds me of like the conversations that you can have with your characters in Dragon Quest, and also the conversations that you can have in, I'm trying to think of the game, but unfortunately it has just left my mind.
Dragon Age?
I mean, yeah, Dragon Age is another example. But I'm just... Oh, Final Fantasy IX with the little vignettes that you have. I don't know if you've played Final Fantasy IX, but...
I have played Final Fantasy IX.
My single favorite thing about Final Fantasy IX is when you're like, you'll be running around in town or something, and you'll get a pop-up saying, something's happening with your other characters. You'll be like, oh, what's going on? And then you'll get an often hilarious vignette involving Steiner or something. So I really enjoy the just little conversations that they have in the Tales games. But can you like who's your favorite character? Who's your favorite, like, sub-character and why? In this?
See, and that's the thing. Like, each character on their own is pretty tropey. Like, there's no character that I, like, look to and I'm like, that character right there does something for me above all else. It's how, at least for me, how they all interact together. Like, they seem like they're having a lot of fun. So I feel like the Tales team and the voice actors had a lot of fun creating all these interactions.
Yeah, I think that's the Tales series in general, right? It's supposed to be kind of, I've characterized it as RPG comfort food in the past.
And when I said on Twitter, I was like, yeah, this is the first time I'm playing a Tales game, because, fun fact, inside bit, Jeremy was supposed to actually review this, and something came up. So I ended up getting it, not because I particularly wanted to, it's just it happened, it fell in my lap, and I've done enough RPGs that I felt I could talk about it confidently. But I said on Twitter it was my first one, and Elliot, who I believe you've had on the podcast before, right?
Elliot Gay? Yes, I have.
He called it Anime the JRPG.
Yep, that sounds about right.
Which is a 100% accurate telling of it. So it feeds into a lot of anime tropes, a lot that we've seen over time, especially recently with a lot of light novel adaptations. So there are certain characters that fit into certain character slots. But when you bring it all together, it's just a lot of fun. And you could probably get that in an anime straight. I said that at the end of the review, but there's more interaction that you'll see in the game than could probably be fit in a linear show.
Yeah, at this point, Namco Bandai definitely has a formula that works for their games, and they have a core fan base that has been around since Symphonia. And Bandai Namco knows, they have a pretty good idea of what they're going to get out of every game. So they seem pretty content to continue relying on that formula, which in some ways is disappointing, because you'd like to see a established franchise be a little more adventurous than the Tales games tend to be, especially since the Tales games are one of the few secondary RPGs, JRPGs that made it into HD. But at the same time, you characterized the Tales of Zestiria as a kind of a palate cleanser, right? A game that is not going to be like super challenging or anything, but it's fun. It's something to do in between your Dragon Ages and your Fallout 4s.
Yeah, no, it's a very light, fun, easy game. It doesn't really try to be far more than what it is. Like, I get the feeling that, like you said, they know what they're trying to get out of it, and they aim directly at it. And for me, especially during review seasons, I tend to jump from the larger titles to larger titles, so I went from Zestiria straight into Assassin's Creed, and I'm kind of blanking on what I had before then, but I do a lot of AAA titles, so for me it's like, okay, well, here's a chance to sort of relax a bit before I jump on to the next really big AAA game or open world title or Western RPG or whatever. So it was really different in the midst of my review season for me.
Yeah, and when we were talking before this podcast, you said that the reactions that fans had in the comments to your review kind of reminded you of the reaction, or kind of reminded you of how fans are reacting to Assassin's Creed, right?
Yeah, so it's like, you talk about that core, like, Bandai Namco understands what Tales is, and they really can't deviate from that too far without really angering their fan base. Assassin's Creed is in that same boat. Like, they can graft stuff onto the same basic engine that they have, but they can't go too far afield. Otherwise, they'll lose the huge mainstream audience that they have. I mean, Tales doesn't have a huge mainstream audience, but you get the idea. But yeah, there's definitely, there are some players who are like, well, I mean, this is exactly the same, and there's some fatigue there. So I was surprised when I put up the Tales of Zestiria review to see people like, oh, it's a Tales game. Some people expressed that they disliked that it was just a Tales game, while others were just like, oh, yeah, no, it sounds like a Tales game. I'll be picking it up. And that's perfectly fine. I actually have no problem with that. Again, I'm a big Assassin's Creed fan, and sometimes it's hard when I get a new one to be like, well, I mean, it's Assassin's Creed. You know what you're getting into.
What did you think of the battle system? You seem to more or less enjoy the kind of action-y, combo-based system that's also kind of, it's not turn-based per se, but it's, if I recall my Tales games correctly, like, you have X number of AP to, like, do actions, and then you're trying to combo up, right?
It's SC now. It's kind of like an MP system, mm-hmm. Where every action costs SC, and when you are not doing things, SC fills at a steady rate. And when you're at the higher part of the SC bar, actions, do more damage. So the idea is you do stuff to maximize a combo, but you try to keep your SC gauge on the higher half, which is harder in the early game, but once you get your full party, it becomes much easier to start managing that stuff.
What are the boss fights like in this one? It's like, usually in a game like this, you are able to grind through random encounters relatively quickly, and then it's when you get to a boss that the strategy gets a little deeper. Is the strategy somewhat deep when you're fighting a boss, or is it kind of a hack slash, hack slash, hack slash until the boss is dead?
I wouldn't say it's deep. It's definitely harder. I mean, most of the
deeper
game, yeah, deeper. Most of the game's combat is actually pretty light and easy. You can bust through a lot of fights, and actually you can turn it on auto and let the computer handle everything, and most of the time it'll be just fine. Boss fights are harder because, one, they have a ton more HP and other attacks that you need to dodge, and two, they tend to rely on you focusing on whatever their elemental weakness is. But the game adds this new system, called armatization, where it's really odd. So the game's party, like, you have four characters in your party on the battlefield at any one time. But only two of those are human characters. The other two are Seraphim, which are the game's weird elemental spirit thing. And you can fuse a human with a Seraphim for a more powerful anime style, this is my final form look. Most bosses require, like, if a boss is weak to fire, then you fuse with the fire Seraphim and you just pretty much use this super form to exploit the boss's weakness. And that's most of the strategy.
Fair enough. But you weren't too high on the progression, though.
Yeah, it was probably the most obtuse. I said this in the most obtuse and confusing progression system I've ever played in an RPG. Because you have leveling, normal leveling, you get XP, you level up, yay. But that's not as important as the stuff that you equip. So you have items that you can equip that add stats, but then these items also have skills on them, and the skills work together in a skill grid. And if you have certain skills in patterns, like, you know, all vertical on one line or two on the same, or you get extra bonuses to skills, and those bonuses are key to doing really well in the game. So what you'll do, instead of just, you know, moving to a new region, hey, here's some the brand new next level of gear, you won't just equip all of the best next level stuff. You'll instead look for, oh, well, this item has this skill and this item has this skills. So you'll end up holding on to gear that in other RPGs you would have gotten rid of a long time ago because it's so weak, because you want the bonuses that come from the skills synergizing.
And it encourages you to hold on to your vendor trash.
Yes. And the fusing system I like, because if you get a bunch of vendor trash with the same name, you can fuse it into a better item. But you never really feel like you're moving forward. Like that, the reason the straightforward RPG progression system of, hey, here's a new area, here's new gear, you put on the new gear, you look better, you're more powerful, is because that's a satisfying progression. You're moving from point A to point B. Whereas in Tales of Zestiria, you're kind of wearing this hodgepodge of different gear, and you never quite know what level of, like, performance you're going to be at. It's just really... I'm sure, like, Tales fans probably love it and are used to it, but it just felt so odd to me.
You know, while you were talking about this, I was trying to think of the most obtuse progression system that I've seen in an RPG, and the answer that comes most readily to mind is probably Final Fantasy VIII, just by virtue of the fact that it's the only game I can think of where you have to draw out spells and attach them to individual stats with different, like, status effects and elemental effects, changing the nature of, like, how you're going to attack it. And then in addition to the summons that you can attack, that you can equip that give you different passive abilities. Now that is a convoluted system.
Yeah, and the real problem with FF8's system was the fact that you had to grind. You had to draw grind just to, like, maximize all of those stats.
So a little bit. I mean, but but it means that you don't have to, like, just sit there and fight enemies. Instead, like, if you know where to find the right spells, you can draw even just a few of them and get a massive bump in your stats. The real trick in Final Fantasy VIII, which is not something I realized at first, is that there are points where you get cards. And if you break down those cards and refine them into materials, you can attach those to your stats, and it's way better than just sitting there and drawing spells out. But the game doesn't really tell you that, so a lot of people are just like, well, I'm sitting here drawing 100 fires and I'm really bored.
Yeah, no, it's just... Yeah, no, it was... I remember just draw grinding in that game so much. And see, I even like that better than Tails's system. And even beyond the skills, there's titles. Each character has character-specific titles. And then all of your gear also, as you use it, gets better. Like, your proficiency in that item goes up. So, like, let's say you have a 5-star older item that has one skill that you need, and then you get a new item that has a better skill that works in your grid much better. You have to start from the bottom on that new item, and then it's just, like, I got it. I was just like, this is not, it's not intuitive, it's not enjoyable, I'm not satisfied by this.
Well, we've been kind of, we've been a little bit down on Tales, I feel like, in this discussion, but ultimately, would you recommend Tales of Systeria?
For a specific type of person.
Well, what is, describe this person to me.
If you watch anime and you enjoy anime or you're a Tales fan, you will enjoy this game. It is for, as we said in the beginning, Namco Bandai Namco, I forget which one it is now, knows their audience. If you are an avid anime fan, I urge you to at least try Tales of Zestiria. If you're a Tales fan, from what I've heard from other Tales fans, it's a Tales game. I'm not so much seeing people who are like Witcher fans or or anything like that looking at this and saying, wow, that's a great game.
Playing devil's advocate, The Witcher, at least in terms of the tone of its storytelling, in some ways has more in common with the Tales series than you think. I'm thinking specifically of the scene where Geralt is getting, like, the haircut or whatever. Very slapstick. It would fit in perfectly in Tales.
Yeah, there's some stuff like that. You definitely get a feeling when, especially when Geralt interacts with characters that he has interacted with before. You get that sense of friendship and camaraderie, or at least understanding, which is very strong here in Tales.
Indeed. Well, as an anime fan, I'm curious, what about anime in particular does Tales of Zestiria kind of capture?
It's not just the character designs. There's a specific set of tropes. Like when I was describing Edna, who is the Earth Seraphim, I called her a kudere, which is a specific anime trope, sort of a quieter, standoffish character, and that's one of the things that, like, I can say to another anime fan, oh, this character is a yandere or tsundere, which is a pretty big one, or this is the extra straight friend or something like that, and anime fans will get it immediately.
Yeah, I like anime, and I don't know what you're talking about.
So
you're like next level, like Saiyan anime fan though, Mike. So,
yeah, it's just like every entertainment medium has
a certain vocabulary,
tropes. Yeah, and vocabulary. And if you are another fan, you can just say, "Oh, hey, it's like this," and that fan will get you.
And oh, it's like saying such and such is a red shirt.
Correct.
It's like the vocabulary.
100%. And Tales of Zestiria definitely feeds into how it makes all of its characters and how it presents them into that sort of, oh, hey, this is like this character from this anime or this specific trope. And it's very easy to talk about that with other anime fans.
Well, Tales of Zestiria came out a couple days ago. It's now in stores, so if you're interested, you can go buy it. If you're still on the fence, well, go check out Mike's review on US Gamer, which will be linked in the show notes. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the show, and good luck the rest of the way in the review season.
Thank you, and hopefully I'll talk to you guys later at some point.
I'm here now with Bob Mackey, who just got back from Portland at the what was it, the Retro Game Expo in the Pacific Northwest? What was the name of the event?
It was the Portland Retro Games Expo. And thanks to everyone who said hi to me there, I met a lot of new friends who like Retronauts and who like US Gamer and everything like that.
Not to get too far off track or anything, but we were just talking about how Portland's a pretty cool city, and it has the best arcade I've been in, the best retro arcade I've been in.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would expect there to be better arcades in the Bay Area, but there really aren't, and Portland is all about, like, beer, arcades, and pinball. It's great.
Yeah, the best you can kind of do is Brewcade, and Brewcade is not bad because you can get actually very good beer there, but the games are kind of an afterthought, and they're sticky, and they're not well-maintained.
Yeah, is that in the city itself?
Yeah, it's in the Castro on
Market.
Okay,
that's right, yeah. It was a little expensive, but not, you know, insane, but yeah, that's a pretty good place.
Yeah, if you ever get up to Portland, definitely check out Ground Control. This has been a Ground Control advertisement. They're not sponsoring us, but I was I just really liked them when I went there.
They helped with our Retronauts meetup that we had out there, so they were great. This is an endorsement.
Well, now that you're back to Civilization, let's talk a little bit about Dragon Quest Heroes, which ordinarily I would not cover a Musou game, or as we would call it, a Dynasty Warriors type game here on this podcast, because usually they're pretty bad. But Dragon Quest Heroes obviously extends back to the original Dragon Quest. And not only that, it really borrows a lot more from the RPGs than I was expecting. Is that kind of your read on it, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, I don't like Musou games at all, and I try to play them whenever they have, like, a franchise I'm interested in. Like, I don't know, I'm not a huge fan of One Piece, but I kind of like it, and I tried the Musou game, and I was like, oh, it's just the same thing. But I think there's a lot more work put into this than they normally would do, and I'm not sure if it was the same way with Hyrule Warriors, but that's what I've heard as well.
Yeah, I played only a little bit of Hyrule Warriors, I think Hyrule Warriors still hedged more toward a traditional Musou experience outside of... There was kind of a neat little quest mode that was fun, but otherwise, structurally, it was very similar. This one is more like... So my experience with the Musou games is mostly with Dynasty Warrior Gundam, which, not great games, I wouldn't recommend them. But a lot of what you do in that game is you're picking random individual missions. There's a very loose story. You are kind of guarding control points a lot of the time. Occasionally you fight a boss. It's pretty awkward. And then your goal is basically to collect as many mobile suits as possible, which I guess is a Gundam thing. I can't speak for a lot of the other ones, but I've always kind of come away a little bit cold. The one thing that jumped out at me about Dragon Quest Heroes, which I reviewed and you can find over on US Gamer, was just that it was a lot more focused experience. You have characters from kind of a broad swath of Dragon Quest games. There are characters from 4, 5, 6, and 8. I don't think...
Yeah, it's actually not that broad. They kind of ignore half the series, and I was just going over the characters before we started. I was like, is there really no one from 7? Okay.
Or 1, 2, and 3, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
At least, not to my knowledge. I couldn't find any.
No,
so.
I looked at a roster list, and I think they do ignore 1, 2, 3, and 7.
And 9.
Obviously 10 and 9, yeah. But there aren't really characters in, like, 3 and 9.
But the characters that they do include, it's fun to see them, I mean, looking really good in this particular game, because I think, like, characters like Bianca, the best we've gotten is, like, on the Nintendo DS, I think. So, it's cool to see her, like, full 3D, like, fully realized, attack set. The attacks and the magic and everything are very true to the characters, and I think the writing is true to the characters as well, for the most part.
Yeah, I do feel like it does follow the tradition of the high standard of the localizations. It might be just like a little tiny bit worse, but it's still better, way better than it could have been. I feel like there's maybe not as much money that went into this as went into like Dragon Quest VIII, for example, but it's still a great localization that still captures that spirit of the new wave of Dragon Quest localizations.
Yeah, I noticed that too. And in terms of production values, it's obvious that they were, yeah, like Yuji Horii seemed to have been obviously very involved with this project. And I think he definitely held them to a high standard versus maybe, I don't know, Gundam.
Yeah.
Where they were like, well, just make the game and get it out there, whatever.
I don't think there have been a lot of inferior Dragon Quest products. I'm sure there's a handful of like really bad games that never came over here that were spinoffs, but I feel like on the whole, that's a series that they know they really are concerned about its reputation. They want it to remain like an institution.
I remember there was maybe a first person game in Japan.
Oh, Dragon Quest Swords, that came out for the Wii. That might be the one dark point. I saw that at the expo for $10. I'm like, should I? I've never played it, but I heard it was really bad. So yeah, I just contradicted myself. That's an example of a bad Dragon Quest spinoff.
And there are people who are partial to Dragon Quest X, but it seemed like it was kind of a retrograde MMORPG that really did not take into account the advancements that had been kind of made in the genre over the years and was really grindy. And that might explain why it didn't come out here, along with the fact that it was on a platform where it had very little chance of being profitable given the infrastructure that was required.
Oh, for sure. I mean, they eventually made a 3DS and a PC port. But again, I don't think that there's enough interest in an online Dragon Quest game here to justify a localization, even though I really wanted to at least try it, you know, just to see like how they transition that sort of gameplay into an MMO context.
I thought that it would come out on the Wii U, but it didn't. Yeah. So.
I have some tweets like buried in my Twitter feed like from years ago, like Dragon Quest 10 coming 2013. I'll stake my life on it. But I'm glad no one held me to that because I'm still alive.
Yes, you are. In terms of Dragon Quest Heroes, a few things that jumped out at me, and I kind of put that in the review. One thing that they tend to do to save money, for example, is that they won't fully render a hub in a lot of their like Musou games. Referring to, I believe the studio is Omega Force. They don't usually render it fully. Like, they'll have talking heads with text boxes. They'll have a lot of menus, that kind of thing, which makes sense. But in this one, this is a admittedly small detail, but I really like that they render out the hub where you can go out and just like actually talk to people to buy, well, you can do a lot of things actually. You can buy items. You can sell stuff, like ingredients if you want. You can forge items that have different, stat points and that sort of thing. You can craft an item and then you, using ingredients, and then you can merge those two items to get, a certain ability. There's actually, I'm not gonna call it like deep or anything, but there is actually a fair amount of RPG-like material in this game.
Yeah, I mean, they borrowed from the most addictive, most compelling, I think, newer Dragon Quest ideas, like the Alchemy Pot and things like that. And there is a reason to go back into missions to get items and things to combine to, like you said, new attacks, new moves, new weapons and armor, things like that.
I'll admit, I was a little bit disappointed by the story.
I didn't expect it to be good. I've only played 4 or 5 hours, to be fair, and I just was like, there's going to be some thinly veiled excuse to get all these characters together, and that's all it's going to be, and I'm only playing this game really to see all of this Dragon Quest stuff rendered on a current-gen system. I mean, that's the main appeal for me, and if the game is, like, slightly fun, that's cool, but I'm a huge Dragon Quest fan, and I do want to see what everything looks like on the PS4, and it looks really good.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. I mean, the first few minutes, actually, I mean, you can tell immediately that they've got it because there's that opening cutscene where you see the kingdom with all of the monsters hanging out with the people and they're doing all of the familiar Dragon Quest monster things. And you're like, oh, this is actually pretty cute. And the soundtrack is on point. They have all of the right sound effects and everything. And in a lot of ways, you could count that as superficial, and to some extent that it is, because when it gets right down to it, I mean, it's still the hack and slash, like, kind of Musou gameplay, but it feels right. It feels like a Dragon Quest game.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it is not, it is very unlike a Dragon Quest game, but at the same time, it is very much like a Dragon Quest game. So they're walking a pretty thin line, and I think they managed to get it right. And this is not necessarily making me interested in playing other Musou games.
Nah.
But I do enjoy this for what it is, and it's not crazy ambitious, but it works just well enough for me to want to play it again, because it's like, what, I wonder what, like, this enemy will look like on the PS4, or like what this character will look like. And I do like these characters, and I'm glad to see them, although I think they do lean, I think they lean pretty hard on Dragon Quest V, don't they, in this game? Or maybe not.
I mean,
it could be just split equally. Like, the guy from 6 I don't even recognize, because I've only like 20 hours into 6, but... Yeah.
Yeah, there are a couple of characters from Dragon Quest IV, like, who appear pretty early on.
I think Elena and her buddy.
Yeah, the guy, Akiril. the Russian guy.
Yeah. And they did keep, I'm not sure who localized the game. Well, Square Enix obviously, but they did stick to the standard set, like, seven or eight years ago with the Dragon Quest localizations. Like, these characters are Russian, these characters are like British, these characters are Scottish, whatever. Like, they were that faithful, and they didn't need to be. They could be like, whatever, like, let's just localize this and get it out. But no, they did pay attention to those old standards, which I'm really happy with.
One thing that was slightly disappointing: no multiplayer.
That is weird, and I feel like the game could have much longer legs if there was multiplayer. And it's such a basic idea that I don't understand why there isn't. It would be great to go online, and it would be more fun because you are going to be doing a lot of grinding. It would be great to have somebody just pull someone into that so you have someone to play with. But as it stands, yeah, that is disappointing.
Yeah, I agree. But there is a sequel coming out in Japan.
Of course.
And it will have multiplayer.
Oh, wow. I need to look. Okay. Man. And also, I want to tell everybody, like, as a games journalist, I get too many games. And this is our curse, I guess. We're just buried in games all the time. But I did pay for a copy of Dragon Quest Heroes, so I deserve a trophy for that. But I put down money and I tweeted at Square Enix, like, here, I bought the game. Now please give us more of these. So I think if you buy the game, you should let Square Enix know. Because I think they're always thinking about ways to bring these games over. They do care. There are people there that care, and they're like thinking about crowdfunding. But I think they need to know there is an interest. So if you buy the game and you play it, I would tweet at them, or at least let them know in some way.
Yeah, it definitely helps for them to know. I'll admit that I had a slight fangirl moment that was probably unprofessional, but during E3, I was interviewing one of the developers of Star Ocean, the new Star Ocean. And after the interview was done, I asked, could you, like, guys, revisit Valkyrie Profile? And because this guy was from Trieste, and he was like, Valkyrie Profile? Does anybody like that? do people like Valkyrie Profile? And I was like, yes, I certainly like Valkyrie Profile a lot. And it retains... people have fond memories of it. And he was like, huh, well, tell them to tell us to make the game. And because, to be honest, like, that's the only way that, like, we're going to get approval is if developers here or the executives hear a groundswell of support and go, oh, this thing is going to actually sell and it's worth us putting the money and time into developing it. Sure. Okay. That's why they're making Star Ocean, because they thought, oh, Star Ocean's like the only game that will sell globally. Valkyrie Profile, they don't care about it in the US, which to an extent is true because it hasn't sold super well over here.
Yeah, but. And there's only been 3 games, right?
Yes, and the second one was good, but also not as good as the original, and the third one was kind of weird. It was a tactical RPG for the DS. I mean, just look at what happened last year, though, with Final Fantasy Type-0, which everybody assumed was all but dead. But then, I mean, not to, like, toot our own horn too much, but Jeremy ran that interview, about Final Fantasy Type-0, and that brought with it a nice little swell of support and letter writing to Square Enix, and they were like, oh, okay, sure, let's make an HD version, and bam, we got that. So
that is true.
So yeah, it just goes to show that if executives hear you, then there's a much better chance. Even though people like to be cynical and go, oh, well, they're not listening to what the public is saying or whatever. But In any case, do you think that if Dragon Quest Heroes, this is speculation time, a lot of people are calling Dragon Quest Heroes kind of the last chance for the series in the US. Agree or disagree?
If it is the last chance, I don't think it's the last chance forever until the end of time, but it could be the last chance for a while. Definitely.
I'll be really surprised if 11 doesn't come out here.
Yeah, and I still am holding out hopes that like the 7 will be like a last minute like final 3DS release, like how Xenoblade or whatever came out on the Wii like as it was dying. But we don't have a lot of time left, and I know that because I just collected my final Street Pass piece. Like, usually when I collect my final piece, and I'm just like, okay, there'll be more puzzles coming. But now it gave me like a trophy. So I'm guessing there won't be any more, and the 3DS is like on life support. So there's a very limited window of time, but I'm still holding out hope. Maybe I'm naive, but I really want Dragon Quest VII, a more playable version of that massive beastly game that I can actually deal with this time.
Well, if the Wii's any guide. I mean, do you remember with the Wii, like, Nintendo just started throwing random stuff out?
Exactly. Like, that's what, like, there's always a surprise just when you think the system is dead, and I'm hoping that'll be it. But there are a lot of games that aren't released in America for the 3DS, so who knows, like, which one of those games they'll pull to give us. But, yeah, I still am holding out hope for that.
Yeah, let's hope that Dragon Quest VII comes out. Speaking of, you were talking about buying the game with your own money and you having too many games, which, yeah, that's a thing with all game journalists, but I happen to have a collector's edition of Dragon Quest Heroes sitting right here.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes, and I will give it away to one of you who are listening to this episode and you're wondering, how can I get a hold of this game collector's, slime collector's edition that has like all of this neat stuff in it? I'm kind of like rotating it around. Like there's a game and there's a whole bunch of DLC and apparently a collectible treasure chest and a slime keychain. A 5-inch slime plush toy draws near, apparently. So, lots of like fun little things in this thing. So we're going to run a mailbag next week. And I want questions, so people who send me the person who sends me the best question, either on Twitter at @the_capbot, on Facebook where I will be posting this, or to email where you can reach me at cat.bailey@usgamer.net, will have their question read on the podcast, and they will get this Slime Collector's Edition. So start sending me your questions, and I will answer them. But in any case, I think final thoughts on Dragon Quest Heroes. I didn't play Dragon Quest until about 5 years ago. I think it's one of those series that has been kind of missed in the US. I really like the world. It's great, you know, it has a wonderful different vibe to it. And I often wonder if it's struggled over here because if it's almost kind of fairy tale nature goes against the sort of the preference for a harder edged anime. Do you ever feel like that, Bob?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think so. It's not quite as like self-serious and technically impressive as Final Fantasy, but it's not quite as anime as like a Tales game. It's like it's stuck in this uncomfortable middle ground that is not immediately appealing to like certain demographics. So I do sense there is a struggle there for them to get it off the ground here. And I mean, it's not as much of an institution here, but there is some knowledge about it here. But unfortunately, it goes away like every 5 years. And I think in America, like we went most of the 90s. I think we went like a good 8 years without seeing a single Dragon Quest release. So those fallow periods really hurt the series.
I sort of feel like it hasn't helped. And it hasn't helped that it's been marginalized to a handheld, and I hate using that word, But like it or not, there exists a perception in this country that if a game is released on handheld, it is not as important somehow. And the last console release of Dragon Quest was on the PlayStation 2, on Dragon Quest 8, in like 2005?
It was 2005, yeah.
2005, which is now a decade. And then after that, you had the DS remakes, and you had Dragon Quest IX on the DS, and then you had the mobile games, which...
I mean, well, 10 was a console game, but we never saw it.
Yeah, it never came out here. So for, I think, the average consumer, out of sight, out of mind, right?
Yeah. And maybe the NX, if it does come here on NX, maybe that could change it, turn it around, because, you know... That is Dragon Quest XI is headed to the NX, correct?
Yes, okay. And the PS4.
I thought so. And the PS4, yeah. So that could restore its esteem in the eyes of consumers. Like, oh, this is no longer, you're no longer going to think this is disposable. It never was, but now it's like has the prestige of being on a console. So
I like to think that, well, Ni No Kuni, when it came out on the PlayStation 3, it had buzz. It had groundswell here in the U.S.
Yeah,
in a way that I haven't seen for a lot of JRPGs, because people are like, oh, I got to celebrate this thing, or I got to support this thing. Look how pretty this game is. And Ni No Kuni wasn't even that good a game.
It wasn't. Right? And I hated to ruin people's fun, but it kind of annoyed me when that game came out. Like, JRPGs are back. It's like, no, they've always been here. You just weren't paying attention. I'm sorry.
People were like, I got to support this game, or there might not be any more. And I'm like, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Just go over to your 3DS, and there's some good games over there.
Yeah. They might not look as good, but they're a lot more fun than a pretty bad Pokemon clone. And if you want to argue with me about that, I definitely will, because I wrote a review of it. And yeah, it could be worse. It's just like astoundingly mediocre for the prestige that's attached to it, like the Ghibli license, I believe Alexander O. Smith translation or Richard Honey something, I forget. Sorry, one of the mega great Square Enix localizers handled it, and it has like the pedigree of like a Dragon Quest translation too. So. Yeah, I felt like so much effort was wasted on a game that wasn't very good.
I think Dragon Quest XI will be good.
I'm hoping it will.
And by virtue of being, and I hate being a console snob, but being on the PlayStation 4, which has a pretty good install base and a pretty wide install base, like it encompasses a wide variety of tastes, I think that Dragon Quest XI, like, this might be like the big chance for Dragon Quest to really be successful here.
Yeah, it only took 30 years, so.
Or for God's sake, put it on Steam.
Yeah, I think Japan is just waking up about that. Square Enix definitely knows what Steam is now, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was a thing, if that actually happens, because we're seeing a lot of high profile Final Fantasy games come to Steam. So I am actually confident about that.
Well, the problem with Steam was that for a long time it was really out of sight, out of mind in Japan, and it's only just recently, I believe, that Steam has started supporting Japanese currency, so now people are finally taking notice of it over there. It's been kind of an infrastructure thing, so that might kind of explain why it's had a harder time, or Japanese developers who have not really been aware of Steam have not kind of understood its global impact, but I think that's changed quite a bit.
Yeah, lots and lots of Capcom games are on Steam too. Not enough. Like, it makes total sense for Phoenix Wright or Ace Attorney to be on Steam, but that hasn't happened yet. I'm just curious as to, like, you guys are missing out on so much money. Every visual novel on Steam is like porn. You could have the one non-porn visual novel on Steam and stand out that way. Like, they're really missing out on an opportunity, I think.
Yeah, and I would totally play Ace Attorney on Steam. I have it on every other freaking platform at this point.
It seems perfect. It's such a low effort game in terms of what it's doing that it could not be hard to put that on a PC.
But in terms of, I mean, you kind of saw, it's a little bit different, but you kind of saw that when Monster Hunter actually came out on a platform that a lot of people own versus the PSP, which the PSP is a fine platform. Don't get me wrong. I like the PSP a lot. It was a great JRPG platform, but just not enough people had it over here. Once it came out on the 3DS, like, oh, look, Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate was like the best and most successful Monster Hunter to date over here in the US. I mean, how much better would it be doing if it actually came out on a mainstream console or PC where it had really good online capabilities?
There is like a weird Chinese version of Monster Hunter that does look really, really good. And I think it's slightly different than the original, than the main series, but that's only on PC in China. And there's weird things like with Capcom. Like, there's a Dragon's Dogma free-to-play JRPG on PC, I believe, and only in Japan. And you can't, like, hack your way into it because there's, like, IP checks and things like that. So they do, like, these weird experiments, but not in the places I think they would make more sense.
Yeah. Monster Hunter was just always a really frustrating thing because there is a mania for co-op here in the U.S., and it just felt like there was a real missed opportunity to be able to really, you know, put the series front and center. And it's managed to build up a pretty loyal fan base here, but it's still kind of a cult thing.
Yeah, it is. I think it's a little too dense to be that popular, but I don't want it to change.
Well, you like Monster Hunter.
Oh, yeah, I love it. But it definitely isn't a pick-up-and-play game. It's a pick-up-and-have-it, like, break your spirit for 30 hours until you get it kind of game.
Oh, yeah, that sounds about right. I was enjoying it when I was playing it, but I like, my friends who play it all live in the East Bay, and I didn't particularly... that's the kind of game that I would rather be playing in person rather than playing online over Skype or whatever. So it kind of fell by the wayside, and I haven't played it so much. Before we go, are you playing any RPGs, or are you looking forward to any other RPGs the rest of the year?
Oh, boy. I want to play Yo-Kai Watch. I'm reviewing it.
Oh.
And I never really liked level 5's RPGs that weren't Dragon Quest. And I did like Fantasy Life, even though I had some problems. So I'm wondering if this will turn it around for me. But I do hear it is very much for children in a way that goes a little lower than what Pokemon is aspiring to do. So I'm just hoping it's not too simplistic. But I like the world. I like what the characters look like. I don't like the anime theme song. It's pretty bad. But I just want to know, like, Japan is crazy about this, and why? What is it about this thing? And will it translate to America? That's all. That's what I want to know.
I played it yesterday, and I can talk about it.
Okay. Well, there should be a demo by the time this goes out, right?
I can talk about it.
Oh. Well, there's a demo as of this recording. There's a demo online, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
I think so. But yes, I have played it, and it is pretty kiddie.
Yeah.
And it's a little odd. And when I say kiddie, I mean just the way it's like bright colors, big buttons, like pretty simple concepts, like, the kid is very much a little kid. It's definitely not dense in the way that Pokemon can get dense. And, you know, when you're in battles, right, the way it works is you have 6 monsters and you're kind of rotating them around by rotating this little thing on your touchscreen. And they attack automatically. And what you're doing is you're waiting for them to charge up their, like, super attack. And then you use it, you do some damage or whatever. And the super attack is like, okay, tap the screen a lot or draw a little pattern or something like that.
Oh, so there's like mini games baked into it. Okay.
Yeah. And then, when your characters are getting hurt, you like rotate in your healer, and there's some passive abilities. I think the main thing that jumps out about me at Yo-Kai Watch is it's pretty. Like, it's a really good-looking 3DS game, which is kind of what you expect from a level 5 game. And I think that it's caught on in Japan because level 5 is just really freaking good at marketing its stuff.
They are.
Right?
And like, I think we're kind of in a weird spot with Yo-Kai Watch because there's already 2 games out in Japan, and the Yo-Kai Watch got Busters, I believe, or like Yo-Kai Busters, which is like a Ghostbusters parody / RPG. And like the same thing happened with Inazuma 11. There's like so many games and we got one of them. And it's just weird. Like, I wonder if we're going to ever play catch up with either of those series.
Well, I'm sure that if Yo-Kai Watch is a hit, then yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot to draw from. I mean, there's a lot of games out in Japan to pick up if you speak the language. But yeah, we're getting the first one that's a little over 2 years old.
I'm curious to see how it does here in the sense that Yo-Kai Watch is very much geared toward kids. And I don't personally plan to play it because it feels a bit young for me. Well, a lot of kids here play mobile. And it's the same in Japan. A lot more kids now play mobile. More kids play mobile now, obviously, than, say, 1998 when Pokemon came out, where Game Boy was the platform of choice for young kids just getting into it. And I'm wondering how many kids who would be the ideal age for Yo-Kai Watch will have a 3DS.
That's a really good point, yeah.
And will have their parents spend $30 to buy this game. Pokemon has managed to remain really popular here in the US for a long time because not only does it appeals to all ages, like truly appeals to all ages, like it's deep enough and interesting enough, mechanically intricate enough for adults, and it's fun and goofy and you're collecting all the monsters if you're a little kid. So we'll see, I guess. I think that if this thing were on mobile, it would be killing it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. I do think kids are gravitating more towards, mobile stuff just because you can do everything on it, obviously. And, it does seem like the 3DS over here is more for the hardcore adult gamer.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah. I mean, I guess not really if you think about it, but it does seem strange that is, that's the current reality. I guess, am I so out of touch?
Yes.
No, it's the children.
No, it's the children who are wrong. I was just looking at my iPhone last night because I got an iPhone 6S. So I was like looking at some games to download for it. And for this ongoing series I'm writing called iOS Games for People Who Hate iOS. That's my plug for it, by the way. The thing that's inescapable about it is that all of the licensed games that would have come out on the DS a decade ago, they're all mobile now. Like, that's how you know, like, the big shift has happened. Like, you know, stuff like Minions. All of the Minions stuff is on mobile now. Whereas 10 years ago, you'd be playing some crappy Minions platformer.
That's true.
Nintendo DS.
That does move all the trash away from the library. It does make the library very small, but it's fun to like go to those retro cons and look at like a huge like shelf full of DS games and be like, there is literally a DS game for every reality show I've never seen and didn't even know existed until now.
Hannah Montana, Barbie,
yeah,
Nickelodeon, SpongeBob SquarePants, you name it, pretty much. That's what the GBA feasted on for so long in THQ. Like Nickelodeon was THQ's bread and butter, and like all of those games were on the GBA.
Oh, for sure.
But, oh well. Yeah, so anyway, I hate to be a downer on Yo-Kai Watch, but that's kind of my read on it.
Yeah, even if I don't like it, I'm going to like have the caveat, like maybe this isn't for a 33-year-old man, you know? Just maybe not everything is for me, so.
Maybe,
yeah.
Just maybe. But in any case, I think we're going to wrap it up here. Bob, do you have anything you want to plug and or social media, etc.?
Oh, yeah. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, and I recommend you listen to Retronauts. And if you've never listened and you're listening to this, check out the Dragon Quest episode, which is really fun. And I also do a Simpsons podcast called Talking Simpsons, which is a chronological exploration of The Simpsons. We just started season 2, which is free to the public. Season 1 is behind a Patreon paywall, and that's at lasertimepodcast.com, or just find it wherever you download podcasts.
For my money, by the way, season 2 is when Simpsons really gets good.
It is good. We did manage to salvage season 1. Like, we're going into it thinking this is going to be rough, but there's a lot of fun to be had in those early episodes, too.
Nice. Yep. Season 2 is a bit underrated, but in any case, yeah, go listen to it. It's Laser Time does really high quality stuff. I actually like them. And
they are great guys.
I say as someone who happens to be friends with the people who creates it, but in any case, and of course you can find me on the _catbot on Twitter. Drop me a line if you want to talk to me at cat.bailey@usgamer.net. And of course, keep an eye on our website. And if you want to win that Dragon Quest Heroes Slime Collector's Edition, send in your questions for next week's mailbag. Until then, for Bob, I've been Cat Bailey, and happy adventuring.